The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 941. It's the 5th of December, 2017. On the podcast today, Paul Athley, Managing Director of Berkeley Energia, or Energia. BKY's ticker, and Paul talks about the progress of the uranium mine in Spain following the receipt of the initial $65 million tranche of the $120 million investment from the Oman Sovereign Wealth Fund. Also on the podcast, Martin Eales, CEO of Rainbow Rare Earths, RBW's ticker, and Martin talks about the export of his first shipment of rare earth concentrate from his Kagara project in Burundi. Also, Alan Green, CEO of Brandon Communications, talks about the following companies: Tertiary Minerals, Prairie Mining, that's PDZ, by the way, Tertiary is TYM, and Cerulean, CER. And as always, have the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Paul Athley, Managing Director of Berkeley Energia, and that's BKY. Paul, thanks for joining me.
Nice to be on the show with you, Justin.
Yes, and I saw a nice picture of you holding an award recently. Before we get into that, though, Paul, and the bits of news you've released since we last chatted, for people listening right now who are new to the podcast or not heard of the company, explain, what is Berkeley Energia all about, please?
We're developing the only major uranium mine in the world today. It's right at the bottom of the uranium price cycle. We're fully funded. We're in construction. We'll be a top 10 producer once we hit the production button in mid-2019.
Yes, you're in a very interesting space. I mean, the dynamics are changing, aren't they? And first of all, let's talk about the uranium price. Like you say, at an historic low at the moment, but it's seen signs of energy. Because I know for a long time you've been chatting about, listen, when it starts to move, it's going to move. Because we've seen previously, it really goes crazy. It goes bananas when the price moves. And at the moment, we're starting to see a bit of movement there. So why is that, Paul? Why is that happening at the moment?
Big production cuts. Over the next 2 years, there's 25% of the world's production is going to come off stream. And the most recent announcement was Cameco with the best and lowest cost uranium mine in the world, a tier one asset, being turned off from January next year. Basically, this will suck all the oversupply out of the market, and we'll see some big, we're anticipating a big reaction in the uranium price over 2018.
Yeah, it is very interesting because you are in the right space at the right time by the looks of it, because you've just received that initial tranche of $65 million from the Oman Sovereign Wealth Fund. So where is this going to be put to use, Paul?
We will announce over the next few days. We've made no secrets of it. It was a time announcement that we're basically commencing the main construction. So this will involve roughly a 12-month build and a 6-month commission. So middle of 2019, we'll be producing and selling uranium, and hopefully be a much stronger, even stronger uranium price than it is today.
Yeah. And I mean, the advantages of you are, like I say, going to be only one of the companies constructing a mine at this time, but also your cost of production is very low, isn't it?
Extremely low. We can make money at current prices, and I think that's the key. So if we can make money at the bottom of the cycle, and that's why we can go ahead. That's why we're pouring concrete at the bottom of the cycle when others are standing back and waiting. Then we get ahead of the pack. So we get some of the best offtake agreements, and we're the first mover into the rising uranium price.
And you've had, in fact, bring us up to speed on the offtake agreements, because you've had some already, haven't you?
We've roughly half our production sold forward at twice the current spot price. As current spot price is in the low 20s, we've got forward contracts spread over 5 years, averaging just over $40 a pound. So yes, that gives you a strong sense of where the utilities think the uranium price is going. They just think it's going up. They want to secure as much as they can now. We, on a regular basis, we're approached by utilities asking to lock in prices for the next 5 years. We're standing up, we're holding away from that. We're going to put ourselves into production, or get as close to production before we put any more in, because we think the uranium price will rise from here.
Yeah, it does speak volumes. You're going to ask why utilities are willing to pay that amount. Because let's be honest, they're not going to sort of overpay, are they? So then they obviously think that's a good deal in the next few years, don't they? So going down the line, and so you say half your production there sold like that. But you're right, hang on to... how do you make that decision? How do you make the decision of how much should we forward sell? Because at the time, when you're selling that, it seems like a very good price. But like I said, you know, they want a bargain as well. So how do you make that decision, Paul?
There's two sides to it. One is we want to cover our costs. We want to make sure that we're covered. So if the uranium price did go down, we've got our costs covered. But the other side of it is that we look at where the market is, and the utilities are what's called uncovered over the next 5 years. Many of their existing contracts are rolling off. So we know that every year there's more utilities in the market looking for more offtake. So we think the markets will get stronger. That is, there'll be more buyers for contracts going forward than there will be mines available to supply. So our call is the uranium price will get stronger over the next few years.
Yeah, and as far as, you know, demand is concerned, I mean, obviously uranium used in nuclear power stations. So, and what's that market like? I mean, I know Japan, after sort of putting a ban on nuclear power, have reversed that policy, haven't they? But around the world, where else is there big demand? Is there power stations going up left, right, and centre here?
Yeah, so Japan recognised that when you turn off nuclear reactors, then your electricity prices rise by 25% and your carbon emissions rise by 50%, and that's recognised around the world. So currently there are 55 nuclear reactors costing about $500 billion being built, because governments recognise that the way to provide us all with clean energy is a combination of renewables, which you and I know wind and the sun doesn't blow and shine all the time. You need a base load. The best base load energy is nuclear, which is low cost and clean. So governments have recognized that. 55 reactors around the world. In fact, this week, the UK government is about to announce $100 million into small to medium reactors in this country. So we'll have a Hinkley Point, which will provide 7% of the country's clean electricity. And then we're going to have a fleet of these small modular reactors, which is part of the George Osborne's plan from a few years ago. And that simply recognizes the same thing, that there's only so much power you can get, clean power you can get from wind and sun. Yeah. You need this base load. What's the most effective way of delivering it? Well, this country is making the bet on small modular reactors, and I think it's a good move.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, I mean, personally yourself here now, are you feeling of late you've seen this price move and you're starting to think, this is it, this is the move? Because no one can actually put a finger on the actual time. It's one of those things, isn't it? People know it's going to happen. When it's going to happen, you know, in a small time frame, it's hard to guess or judge. So are you starting to think now that this is it, this is the move going forward?
Well, I would feel slightly vindicated, Justin, because when I spoke to you, we raised money a year ago when the uranium price was $17.50 a pound. It's now $23.50, so it's moved, it's moving.
Yeah.
And all I'm calling to you is that it will be substantially higher during 2018. Who knows where it'll be 2019, as in, you know, it could take off by then. But this slow progression that we're seeing just makes us more and more profitable as we go forward.
Yeah, absolutely. Paul, if someone's listening to this and like the sound of this and where it's headed, but are not yet following the story on Vox Markets, could you give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page, please?
I'm going to give them one reason, because it's the mechanics of why our share price will go up. There's the biggest uranium fund in the world is called the Global X ETF, and it captures everybody's interest in North America and elsewhere. People who just want to, generalists want to buy exposure to uranium. Well, we are now their fourth biggest holding, behind Cameco, behind the big Chinese, behind some of the big Canadians. So whenever money goes into that fund, they buy our stock. So when the uranium price goes up and people show interest in uranium, they buy the ETF, our share price goes up.
I like that, Paul. I will accept one reason because that's such a powerful reason. So what do they call that fund?
It's called the Global X Uranium ETF. And I think it trades as URA. Someone will correct me on that, of course, but I think it's URA and you can look it up on Google.
Yeah.
But it's the global ex-uranium ETF, and that's a really big driver of our stock.
Yeah, it is URA, that's right. Yeah, that's right. Okay, excellent. That's very interesting. Paul, thank you for that. It's good to chat to you. And like I said, the space is getting more interesting every month we go by. So hopefully we'll chat in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Nice to talk to you, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Martin Eales, CEO of Rainbow Rare Earths. That's RBW ticker. Martin, thanks for joining me again.
It's a pleasure, Justin, as ever.
And you've managed to sort of come across, achieved a massive milestone for the company, it seems, and one that surprised me, and we'll get to that in a bit. But before we do, Martin, for people listening right now, not aware of what you do at Rainbow Rare Earths, give them a brief summary, if you could, please.
Of course. Well, Rainbow is the only rare earths mine in Africa. We have a very high-grade project. We are now mining and exporting rare earth mineral concentrate from Burundi in East Africa, having IPO'd in London at the start of 2017.
Yeah, you've certainly hit the ground running because, you know, there are so many AIM companies in the resource sector that, get onto AIM with the intention of mining. And they seem to be exploring forever. And you think, what are they doing? Do they intend to take this through to production stage or development? But they don't seem to. But fair play, you've done it within a year. So that's impressive stuff. Now, the RNS here, first production and shipment of rare earth concentrate. And like it says there, you are becoming one of the first producers of rare earths outside of China and the only African producer. That surprised me. Africa's a massive place. And, of course, the mineralization there is vast. And I know there's a lot of projects going on, exploration stage. But you're the only producer in Africa.
Well, that's right, Justin. There are lots of development projects around. But the cliche with rare earths is they're not particularly rare. But the rare thing is finding an economic deposit. So there are lots of development projects, and indeed in Africa and elsewhere. But typically, those projects need a lot of capex spent on them to turn them into an operating mine and with the equipment to take the ore they mine up to a level that's capable of being processed into the rare earths. Our advantage is, and the fact that makes us unique, is that our grade is so much higher in the ground. So consequently, the volumes we mine and our costs and our capex are much, much lower than many other mining projects.
Okay, and so take us through what you've done exactly and what's next there, Martin?
Okay, well, as listeners will know, we started the year with a target of being in production and achieving first sales by the end of 2017, and which is a pretty ambitious target to start with, but we're delighted that we've done it. And we have produced our first concentrate as I speak. It's being transported to port in Mombasa in Kenya. And crucially for us, we get paid the bulk of our money once we deliver it at port. So it doesn't matter where it goes in the world on the ship after that. We've been paid the bulk of our money. We've also announced that our large processing plant is in final commissioning, that we expect to be completed in just about 2 weeks from now. So the full processing plant will be fully operational before the end of the month.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And like I say, you've got an offtake partner there in, is it ThyssenKrupp, is how you pronounce it? Is that right?
Correct. ThyssenKrupp, the blue chip German company.
That's right,
I always say it's a massive seal of approval for a small company like us to be partnered with a global blue chip. It's fantastic name recognition for us. And, you know, they've been interested in our product for a long time. And my first meeting with ThyssenKrupp was more than 3.5 years ago. They've stuck with us right through the development to this stage. And yeah, now they're actively selling our material.
Yeah, and so and they've signed a distribution and offtake agreement up to 10,000 tons per annum, and yet you're hoping to ramp up to 5,000. So there's plenty of headroom there, isn't there?
There's plenty, yeah. So from our discussions with them and feedback from customers, we're pretty confident that whatever we can produce, there is demand for it. So it's in our interests to ramp up our production as quickly as possible.
Yeah, and looking at what you've got there, resource, I mean, can this go further? Can you produce more than this? I mean, eventually, I mean, are you looking to go even further than, say, 5,000-10,000 tons? Or
we'd like to. Obviously, being able to ramp up production is a combination of two things. It's having confidence in where next in the deposit we're going to start mining, but also having the capital to effectively fund that ramp up. So the next 6 months, we've announced we'd like to produce 2,250 tons of concentrate before the end of our financial year in June, and exit 2018 at the run rate of 5,000 tonnes a year. So, yeah, that's pretty rapid advancement, even though the numbers are relatively small in volume terms. And from the cash flows from the forthcoming sales, we'll gradually start being able to ramp up production on a regular basis.
I don't know if you'd like to say this, but how much is a tonne of like rare earths? I mean, a basket? I mean, because it's hard to say, isn't it, really? Because different makeup of the basket, isn't it?
Correct. So, our average ton will have different quantities of the various rare earth metals in oxide form. We can quote the price of our basket, which we have done in a few of our announcements this year. But that basket price is the addition of all the individual elements on a separated basis, because there is no spot market for rare earth concentrate. And any of our sales that ThyssenKrupp arranged for us are on a negotiated basis and are commercially sensitive. So it's difficult for us to pinpoint a price for our rare earth concentrate. But when we put out some numbers for the financial year, people will be able to work it out pretty quickly in terms of average price per tonne.
Yeah, marvellous stuff. Excellent, Martin. Well, it's progressing well. And if people are listening to this and like the sound of where this is going, but are not yet following the story on Vox Markets, give them three quick reasons, if you could, why they should hit that follow button on your page.
Okay, rare earths are exciting because they go into a wide range of industrial uses driven by rapid demand take up for electric vehicles. There's limited supply. We're only the second rare earth mine outside of China and producing in the world. And we're low cost, low capex, high margin.
Marvellous. Martin, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll chat again in the not too distant future. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications. You're all right, Al?
Very good, thanks, Jess. Just getting ready for Christmas, Christmas orders off Amazon, planning the booze run, all the rest of it.
Well, that's why Toys R Us are going through, they're shutting about 26 stores, I think, aren't they? Because, let's be honest, I genuinely hate shopping. I hate going to the shops.
If I can sit
at my desk and order it online, I will do. It's a lot easier. And you could see why those massive warehouse-style shops are out of favour, really. Especially toys. I understand clothes, you maybe try them on, kids and stuff. But toys, you get what you see, essentially. That's it.
You do. And the thing is, all of these stores go through eras, don't they? Toys R Us had its era, where it was the big sort of toy superstore. Yes, great, take the kids down. And, a lot of parents took the kids in there just so they could have a quiet half an hour. Let the kids run around and create havoc. So that finished. And prior to that, of course, you had Woolworths, the sort of the high street superstore with everything, and that's disappeared. And now, as you say, I think the big department stores and superstores, out of town superstores, have had their day, and it's now online. Big companies like Amazon and so on.
Yeah, exactly. Well, do you know what? And first of all, Al, I've got to sort of applaud you, because for a while you've been coming on here on a regular basis talking about tertiary minerals. And I've always liked them. I've always been on a watch list. And Richard's been on the podcast a couple of times. He's supposed to come on actually this week. But last week, two RNSs came out. One was about the death of a director. And so he had to change his diary, of course. So he had to postpone. Yeah. So he's coming on, hopefully. But you mentioned tertiary minerals. You've massive, how big their resources. And I've always kept them on my watch list, because I like companies with big resources, because to me, their valuation is underpinned by that asset, The problem is, if you're a small company, of course, when it comes to mining that stuff, then it's going to cost a lot of money to get it out, so you have to secure funds. But I think that all changed last week with that RNS. But in fact, take us through it, Al, if you will. TYM is the ticker.
That's right. So TYM is the ticker, Tertiary Minerals is the company. And to start with, just a bit of background, it's the only UK and AIM-listed fluorspar company. Now, fluorspar, it's one of those chemicals that everyone goes, what? What's it about? And then they move on. But fluorspar actually is in pretty well every production process you can imagine. So much so that the EU has named fluorspar of one of its 27 critical minerals. Mm-hmm. So it's used in production of steel, cement, aluminium, hydrofluoric acid, electrical. It's also used in lithium batteries. So the electric vehicle revolution and the upsurge in production there will require fluorspar for production. It's used for farm applications and also petrochemicals too. So this chemical is absolutely critical. Currently selling on the world market for about $300 a ton, and whereas China previously had its own resources, it's now set to become a net importer. And indeed, if you go to the Brand UK website on the tertiary minerals page under PIR multi-channel, you'll be able to see an interview with some with a couple of industry experts by a website called Informed that basically take you through the whole fluorspar process and where the market is. So with China set to become a net importer, tertiary minerals has a JORC classified resource of 13.1 million tonnes. So based on $300 a tonne, you can do the math on that, and I think that gives you a pretty fair idea.
Just under 4 billion, and this is, I've done the maths, I bought into them last week before the rally, one of my best rises, over a two-day period, did about 300%, I think, which is quite nice. But, and the interesting thing is, I looked at the research on the website, and Richards did a presentation there, and at the end of the Q&A, someone did ask him of that resource, and he says, is that recoverable? He says, that's mineable, that's recoverable.
It is.
And so that's not just in a wider global resource that and they get a percentage of that. You know, that's 13.1, you can times by $300. And like I said, that's at fluorspar at the moment. It's not at a historic high, it's at a low, isn't it? So, I mean, that could go up, you know?
But, and that's why the Possil deal is all the more interesting. But I'm going to look at that in a second, but I just want to go back to Richard and the board. You know, we've been working with Richards and Tertiary Minerals for the past couple years, and Richard has also been on the road. He's been out presenting at Shares magazine evenings, Shares events, at Proactive evenings, and many other events. Talking to investors, and the resource has always been there. As you said just now, Justin, the difficulty is it's actually getting to the extraction process. It's actually getting it mined, getting the infrastructure in place, and everything else. It was always some way off. Just look at the board themselves. You've got David Whitehead, who very sadly died last week. He's a billet engineer. Patrick Cheatham, who's the chairman, he's well known. Donald McAllister, who's many years' experience, and also Colin Fitch. And these guys have positions in various mining companies around the world. So there's a great deal of experience there. But at the head, we've got Richard Clemmie. And Richard, aside from the fact that I've known him, I know him personally, I know his family, and he's got great personal integrity, he's a very highly qualified mining engineer with over 20 years' experience. Mm-hmm. And with that comes a lot of realism and also a fair amount of caution too. And you look through any of the statements the company has made, he's always very cautious in his outlook and in the way he talks about it. He's highly thought of within the industry. If we go on to the Possil deal that was announced last week, the director at Possil, Michael Fanger, said that he's known and worked with Richard on a number of projects for many, many years. So,
Is this deal that makes us a game changer? Is there's no doubt they had a huge resource, but like I said, with small companies, can they get out of the ground? And this deal there goes some way to answering that question, I think, and that's why it changed my mind on the company, you know, and that's why I invested.
But also strategically, it kind of draws a line in the sand for fluorspar as well. So you've got a German commodity trading giant that was founded in 1915, basically saying to the world, we believe the fluorspar value is on the turn. And indeed, we've seen over the past year there have been other projects. There's a project at St. Lawrence in Canada where the Canadian government have invested into that fluorspar mine and the local community. Again, recognition that there's a turning point reached in the fluorspar market. But what Possil are going to do in this arrangement, they've committed to buy 70% of the acid grade spar that is produced at the three tertiary projects. And those three projects are Storuman in Sweden, Lassidalen in Norway, and the biggest one is the MB project in Nevada. So you've got absolute commitment there to buy the fluorspar. In exchange for that, they will provide part pre-financing and logistical support, to develop the mines, And B, as Richard has also stated in previous previous announcements, they're going to make further acquisitions. There are other projects that they can bring in line, and obviously with the economies of scale they can generate with the other projects, they can make they can basically turn Tertiary into a far bigger company, owning different assets and with a ready-made sales channel. So this is seismic for the company. It's massively exciting, and this is just on the first part. I mean, the company's got other projects too. It's got a it sold its two projects in Finland to Orion Resources that is part owned by the Kinross Gold Corporation, where they've got something like £150,000 worth of shares and pre-production and royalty interests. They've also got interests in tantalum projects in Finland and a rare earth project in the Middle East, but it's primarily fluorspar. This is what the company is about, and you know we've got a company that's worth currently five million sterling on the market that has leapt last week on the back of this deal. But prior to the possible deal ever materializing, broker SB Angel published a buy note and a 9p price target on the company. Beaufort Securities also published a buy note with a 10p price target. And this is before the possible deal came along. So it gives you some idea of the latent value that's waiting there to be unlocked.
Yeah, I bought in them over sort of 0.65, I think, and now they're pretty much a little bit more double. They'd have pulled back, of course they would, because you know there's that initial discovery of people realizing the realization that this is a transformational deal. But as always, you know, you get people taking profit, and it's come back. So I think now, even at this level, like you say, 4.8 million is still a micro cap, and so and the resource then, and in fact, they've got net assets of just around about that amount anyway. So that's not, and that's not included. What I'm saying is, they have those resources underpin this valuation completely. You know, it's not hype here. They do have a valuation there. They do have assets worth a lot of money. You know,
and they do.
People understand they are 100% owned, which is you know, sometimes that is not the case for small companies, but it's 100% owned, aren't they?
Well, they're 100% owned, but also going back to what I said about Richard earlier, the offices the companies run from are shared with Sunrise Resources, so they share the running costs. So the actual running costs of the company are it's one of the lowest on AIM. So it's 100% owned, and the running costs are incredibly low too. So everything is in place. I say seismic. You know, we often sort of use superlatives when we talk about companies, but in this case, I think seismic is a thoroughly deserved superlative for where Tertiary is right now.
Marvellous stuff. Anything else, Al? Looking at it?
Yep, two more companies for you. We also talked about Prairie Mining recently as well, and there was a development there last week, which I think is very important. Just going back to Prairie, the EPIC code is PDZ, currently trading at 31p. It's got a market cap of 52 million, and Prairie is Prairie owns two coking coal projects in Poland, and coking coal, of course, is again it's a vitally important component in the production of steel and steel smelting. And with the infrastructural developments throughout Europe, clearly a low-cost European supplier is very high on the list of priorities for any steel manufacturers. Mm-hmm. Coking coal sells for roughly $200 a ton, and the one of the mines, in particular, Jankarski, it's been referred to as one of the highest potential or the mine with the highest potential, or the most advanced coking coal project in the Northern Hemisphere, which is no mean achievement really, given where the company is right now. There have been a number of notes published on the company and the group, and with production set to start on the mine in 2018 and developments taking place. Last week we had an announcement from Prairie to say it had advanced the environmental permitting for the mine. It had also undertaken a survey of the community, and a resounding 74% of the residents came back, said they would support the building of a new mine in the region, which is overwhelming and really really does give the green light for the authorities there to progress this and push this forward into production. The other project is the Debiensko mine, and again that's a coking coal operation. And the combined JORC resources, there are mining engineers and analysts who've gone into there have attributed a net present value between the two projects of 3.3 billion sterling. You know, which is massive again, and. With Jankarski so close to the starting blocks now, this is a very, very exciting time. And also, I suppose you could look at Prairie as being the next stage on from where Tertiary are right now. The mining infrastructure is all in place. Everything's there. Prairie has a partner in terms to provide funding and logistical support in China Coal. So all of the elements are in place for this company to complete construction and start production of coking coal and supply to the market.
Yeah, another one with a massive resource there.
Huge
cool.
Resource, yeah.
Anything else, Al?
Yes, indeed. My colleague, Dr. David Paul at Vectorvest, picked up a company last week, and we have discussed this before on the podcast. It's a company called Cerillion. The epic code is CER. Mm-hmm. Shares have traded as high as 160p on the year, and as low as 80p. Currently today trading at 152p. The company announced a fantastic set of full year results in September. Just to go back on what's really do, basically they're an IT solutions company providing mission critical software for billing, charging, and also customer relationship management systems. The company was actually spun out of do you remember Logica PLC? You may remember that name from before. Yeah. They were spun out of there by the current CEO Louis Hall in 1999. So the company and infrastructure have been in the current format for many years. Going back to the results, at the end of November, the company announced EBITDA grown by 18%, revenues were up 8.5% to 16 million. And the company proposed a dividend, a final dividend of 2.8p, which brings the total dividend up to 4.2p, which is a rise of 7.7%. So this is combined with a back order book that is up 40% on this time last year. So the company is in a very strong position, and the CEO said he was very positive going forward. Today, the company has just announced it's won another major telecoms contract worth $8.5 million with a Euro telecoms operator. But to go back to Vectorvest, Vectorvest actually flagged an increase in earnings growth. One of the metrics on the Vectorvest platform is the GRT earnings growth and the earnings growth. And with a rating of 36%, that's a level that which Vectorvest considers to be excellent. But this was flagged back to subscribers there in the summer. So the Vectorvest also attribute a valuation to Cerillion of £1.77p, currently trading at 150p, so it's well on the way to that. So anyone buying into this last week will be sitting on a nice little profit now. But I think also it's the bigger picture. It's the foundations the company have laid in place, the confidence of the CEO, the fact that the CEO, Louis Hall, has been there since the buyout from Logic in 1999 and was involved in that. So he's been at the helm and has steered the company successfully since that time. And everything looks in place for an acceleration in new contracts and the consequential earnings growth to go with it.
Marvellous. That's CER. Is it Cerillion or Carillion?
Cerillion, I think. Well, I call it Cerillion. Some people may call it Carillion.
Yeah, I think
Carillion's the building company. I don't think they're in quite such good shape. So
yeah,
there
exactly,
we go.
Yeah. Marvellous stuff. Al, thanks for that, fella, and we'll speak next week.
Thanks a lot, Jeff. Speak next week.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Market in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Tertiary Minerals, TYM. And Alan talked about those earlier. Lions Gold, by the way, Tertiary, I think it's a long way to go in that sign-up deal, as I mentioned earlier. I think it's very significant. At Forge, rallying strongly, Lions Gold, Lion. I don't know if that was a lion, actually. At three, Valerix, VAL. Worth doing some research on that. At two, Physiomics, PYC. And number one, It's the head of the graphene pack with its brand Nanine. It's Varsarion, VRS. All right, top five most liked RNSs are as follows. At five, Optibiotics Health. Opti's ticker there. Proposed directorate changes. At four, United Oil and Gas. Holdings in company. Sasha. I know Sasha quite well. He's taken up to 3% in that company. Obviously very confident in the prospects. And Brian Larkin, CEO, has been on the podcast. And I do like his strategy. And, sort of invaluable connections there with Tullow Oil. At three, Sirius Petroleum, SRSP. Environmental Baseline Studies, Revalidation of DPR. At two, Metal Tiger, Kingsgate Shareholder Meeting. And number one, most liked RNS, was yesterday afternoon from Tullow Energy. That's Exercise of Options. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.